Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech language pathologist.
And I'm Kate Hensler, developmental interventionist for SET program here in Louisville, Kentucky. How are you tonight, Laura?
I'm good. Sorry, the music's still playing, honey. Well, I guess we'll just have musical background the whole show tonight.
I think next week I'll just do the music. Do, do, do. Do, do, do.
Okay, Laura.
Just keep going.
It's going to be our soundtrack. Now it's stopped. Wow. It's not us. See, it's automated. And Johnny can stop it, but sometimes he tries to stop it, and that makes it start over. So we try not to stop it, and so it's a Blog Talk Radio problem. So sorry about that. Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Well, Brooke is already on the line from last week.
Oh, you're kidding. Hi, Brooke.
No.
Hey. How are you?
I'm good. How are you all?
I'm great.
Okay, good. Kate, give us the update on the Dream House so we'll get going after that. I think our listeners always enjoy hearing your Dream House countdown.
Well, we're down to 28 days with the...
Woohoo!
I mean, that's the closing date on the loan, but, you know, we've secretly got a different loan, we hope, so we may have 20 days on top of that, but we're getting close. It's possible it could happen in 28 days. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's closer and closer. Well, I'm glad that's moving along, and I have already talked to you off the line about all the earlier in the week about all the things that were going on and still needed to be done, but I'm glad it's moving in the right direction.
Yes, it is.
Okay, a couple quick announcements before we get going with Brooke, our guest from last week. I've finalized the dates for Tennessee and Georgia, and let me announce those. Knoxville is Thursday, April 28th. Chattanooga is Friday, April 29th. Macon, Georgia is Thursday, May 5th. And then Atlanta, Friday, May 6th. So I'm so excited about those dates. I wanted to get those out there, and those will be on the website shortly after the show, so folks can go ahead and register, and I know we're going to have a great time in all four of those cities. So come see me. I'd love to have you. Okay, we are continuing tonight our discussion from last week. We had Brooke, who's a developmental therapist on. She's from Indiana, and she is working with a little boy who doesn't really like lots of toys, and those kinds of kids can be such a challenge for those of us who work in birth to three programs, because you are there for about an hour typically and you don't have much to do if the kid doesn't really like to play with toys. So we were giving her some additional ideas last week. And did you get a chance to see your little guy this week, Brooke, and how did some of those ideas go?
I did. Well, it kind of started off different this week because he wasn't home. But I found out that he was at his aunt's, and his mom just had forgot to call me, so I got to go to his aunt's, who lives right nearby. So it was a different environment that I wasn't thinking about that house, but it actually turned out really well because she had a big sectional, and we were able to get behind the couch and kind of walk him in with the ottoman. And he did still have a way out, which he found. I think he was still a little different just because we were in a different place.
Right.
I took the Elefin, and I took the nose completely off, and he was happy and, like, laughed a little and started to really kind of shake his fist like he wanted to clap maybe, but he immediately put him in his mouth. The little butterfly went straight to the mouth, so... And then he got upset with me, you know, and, oh, no, you can't eat those, you know. Let's play. And I tried throwing them in the air, you know, and blowing them with him. But he just really wanted to put them in his mouth. So
yeah, because that's how he's nonverbal. He doesn't understand a lot of language yet. So a lot of kids, when they have those really global developmental delays, really do still explore lots of new toys or even things that would be kind of aversive to other kids. Like I had a kid one time whose dad smoked, and darn if he didn't put cigarette butts in his mouth all the time. And that's how he explored. And mouthing typically, you know, goes away by the time a kid is, marches toward two, gets close to that second birthday. But when they're cognitively not two and language-wise not two, not developmentally two yet, you're still going to see a lot of that mouthing. So how did you solve that when he was really...
I know I'd read about what you should do with mouthing toys in your book, which is like give them the little chew thing, like maybe flip it onto them, which I talked to his mom about when I very first started, and she did it for a while, but then, you know, it just, you know, happens to go, you do it and then you don't, but so I really thought, let's do that again, you know, let's get that in the works, and his mom wasn't there, so I could talk to her. And those are things that she would agree with, you know, that she needs to get back with doing that again to keep him able to play, that he could chew on that if he needed to.
Let me ask you can I ask you something real quick about that? Do you think he put those in his mouth because those were new to him and so novel that he had never seen that
before and he didn't
know what it was?
Yeah, I do, because at first he didn't want to even touch them. he just looked like, what is on me? Oh, my goodness.
Right.
And then he, you know, just reached down and touched one like you're touching something for the very first time, and then straight to the mouth. And I had never brought it before, so it was definitely, he was finding out what was going on. But then there was a TV on in the back bedroom, which I did not know. And he wormed his way out, and I was like, where is he going? You know, is it okay for me to go after him? And I get back there, and he's in front of the TV, eyes lit up, you know, just so excited, smile on his face, like, he was seeing Mickey Mouse, you know.
Was he flapping his hands?
He was flapping the hands, you know, and I pull him away, let's go play, and he gets really upset, you know, whenever you want him to stop watching or when you turn it off, he gets upset. But I got the parachute out again, and he does like that, you know, he loves to do that, so his aunt and I played peekaboo with him and played with that for a little while. Let me look at my notes here. It's hard to remember. I did get him to do the album again. You know, he really was actually hitting it. He remembered, I feel like.
Yay.
You know, he after we did it a couple of times, he was hitting on the ottoman and looking at me, and I showed his aunt, watch, you know, she was like, oh my goodness.
So she noticed that was a big difference. She saw that he was
did.
Really participating and really remembered. That's great.
Yeah, something that she told me was that his uncle, and his mom and dad told me this before too, his uncle that is her husband, he really connects with him. And like she said, he lights up when he walks in the room. They have this connection. And I just thought, is that typical? Okay, with maybe, I don't know if it's, he's a big man, you know, and maybe, I don't know. She said they had the same level. They're on the same level is what she said, her husband.
Which means her husband is great at engaging kids.
Yes.
And you know what? I bet that's not the only kid he can engage. I bet he's like my husband. When we go in Target or the grocery store, kids just look at him and are drawn to him and are connected to him, especially when he's making goofy faces at him or smiling at him or, you know, trying to kind of engage them. And some people, I think, just naturally kind of have that with children. And so he's probably connected on a different level with your little guy than maybe other men have tried to do before.
Since he was a baby, she said, since he was a baby, they've just had a connection like none other, you know. She said, you would be amazed. I wish he was here so you could see it, but I told her, you know, and I left the notes for his mom and work on clapping, which is something I definitely should have caught with that he, you know, he's not clapping, he's not ready for signing yet. But anyway,
right.
We are going
to
get
well,
there.
Well, let me ask you, what does he do when you try to help him clap? Is that another time that he's really gets mad at you for touching him?
He doesn't get as mad. He was
okay.
Letting me touch him a lot more the other day than normal.
Good.
I kind of just see, you know, how is he going to react? Because sometimes he just wants to get away from me and he cries. But the other day he wasn't
right.
as upset with me. He kind of was letting me, you know, with his hands and just kind of wait and see what he does, you know. Sometimes he's okay. Sometimes it's like, don't touch me. I'm leaving.
Right.
I'm done. So
I would try to really shape that ah boom right after he's imitated that and, you know, put his hands down on the ottoman or the table or wherever you guys are. I would immediately model clapping. And then if he doesn't do it, reach out and kind of grab him and help him do it like a couple times, not like 15 times or anything, just a couple of times to maybe get him started. And I would try to shape it with that behavior that he's already trying to imitate, that motor thing. It may be too much in the next week or two because he's just learned how to copy the boom part, but I bet you'll be able to get it in kind of in the context of that game that he already likes. And be sure that you're doing a big yay when you're saying it so he starts to associate, okay, anytime I hear that yay, I'm going to clap
okay.
with that. So that would be an idea that I would have for getting clapping going. What do you think, Kate?
I think that's great. One thing I've noticed with these kids is sometimes their sensitivity to touch is not infrequently sensitive to light touch. And so my guess is the big, strong uncle guy has always been very firm with him, lots of deep pressure, lots of movement. I would kind of factor that into how you help him clap it. Sometimes if
okay.
you'll take him and really give him, I mean, grab those little wrists and bam, 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 so they're getting lots of... Lots of
deep, heavy.
Yeah,
okay.
kind of input.
Yeah,
in that clap, it's more likely to be less aversive to them and more positive to them. So don't be timid about. And I find that a lot of times with kids who have a myriad of issues. Oftentimes, sensory is definitely one of them. And those sensory kids, if you'll be fairly, I don't mean firm that he's going to smack his hands and hurt himself, but when you're touching them, I think my natural tendency is to think he doesn't like to be touched, go light. And really, it's more he doesn't like to be touched, go heavy. So
yeah.
when you're touching him in general, rub his little belly, rub his little arms, grab those legs, rub those feet, deep, 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 deep. They tend to like it way more than
okay.
a little touch.
Okay.
And so I would factor that into the clap, make it pretty big, pretty hard. Pretty loud, pretty lots of feedback for him so that it's more rewarding and he's more likely to pick it up on his own.
Okay, that sounds
yeah.
good.
I think that's a good idea. I would put Uncle on clapping too.
Okay.
If he likes
okay, I'll give him some homework.
Well,
they
if
do
he likes
clothes, then yeah.
Yeah, and if he likes him so much and is connected like that, sometimes, dad will come home unexpectedly from work, and I'll notice, okay, the kid really is so connected with dad, let's try these things that we've been working on with me and with mom, and sometimes dad can get a kid to do something within, a few tries, whereas we've worked on it for weeks and weeks and weeks. So I would put Uncle on that clapping,
okay.
and you just tell mom to say, he's got a great connection with you, and the speech therapist noted, or the DT noticed that when she was here, and she wondered if you wouldn't try to see if you can teach him how to do that. And if he cares enough about that kid to be so connected with him already, when he's kind of a hard kid to connect with, I think he'll want to jump right on that and think he's really important in this whole therapy process because he obviously loves him and cares about him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that would be good homework for Uncle there.
That's
to try
awesome.
That, and then he might also try that game that that aunt that he played with you and his parents and with the aunt and try a boom. And again, the more we can widen a little kid's like this, more we can widen his social circle with things that are new. Again, the new part of that assigning that homework is that it's the same game that he plays with you. So it's not a new person. It's just one little thing that's new. So anything that you have great success with, you want to be sure that mom and dad are carrying that over. And if he spends a lot of time at aunt and uncle's house, that they're playing those same kind of little things with him too, because that just builds the familiarity of that routine, and he does start to recognize, gosh, all these people are doing the same things, and you know, starts to make associations and starts to really learn, okay, this word means this no matter who says it, and we play this game the same way every time, because so many of these kids really don't make those associations and don't really make sense of their worlds. So you help them kind of put some of those patterns in place, and then you start to see, like you, like his aunt saw, learning. You start to see progress. Oh, my gosh, he can do that. And then it just makes everybody more excited about participating.
Right. Well, that she was very excited. I mean, she has three kids of her own, and she's actually in school for nursing and getting ready to study autism.
Wow.
I do research on autism, so she was really interested in talking to me a little bit about it and what I thought. And but also the good news was that he saw his occupational therapist this week. He went to a center and saw someone, and she did the brushing technique, which I had heard about, but I had never really knew what it was.
Right.
And so he had the brush, and his aunt kind of showed me what she was doing, and they're having him do that every 2 hours.
Yeah, and they don't need to skimp on that, because for brushing to be effective, well, let me just say this. For the kids that it's most effective with are the kids whose parents and caregivers can really follow through with that schedule, and it is a lot. I would have been hard pressed to do a really good job with brushing with my own children, but when kids really need that input, you know, with some kids that makes a big difference. Yeah. Yeah. And let me just say too, sometimes brushing doesn't work with every kid. And so if you're another therapist listening, don't just blame it on the mom. Well, if the mom did it every 2 hours, it would work. It's her fault. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying the kids that it works on, you'll get the biggest bang for your buck if you can stick to that every 2 hour frequency like she suggested. So that's great. And so that tells us that she knows that he has big time sensory issues and that tactile input for him is important. And that goes back to Kate's point about, you know, light touch isn't going to be good for him. It needs to be that heavy movement, that deep pressure, all that input for him to recognize that, and for you to, again, help him regulate and him to get the most bang for your buck from those kinds of touching activities.
And just for people who aren't therapists and don't know about this brushing, Laura, isn't it the Wheelbarger brushing protocol?
It is, and you can search it like that on the internet. And maybe when we have our OT friends on in the next couple of months, we can have somebody really talk about that and what that is and the theory behind it, and really demystify some of that for therapists who haven't been familiar with that, or for parents who've heard of that. But it really is, again, you use a surgical brush for that, one of those little white bristly brushes that you think about that doctors scrub in with on Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, if you're an ER and Grey's fan, former ER, current Grey's fan, is that little scrubby brush they use.
Yeah, and they have a set way that they want it to be done, you know, on a kid. And again, it's supposed to help him register or process more clearly or more typically in his little body. And the reason that they do it is because we know kids like this that are disconnected and who have some different reactions to things. We know that their brains aren't processing and their little bodies aren't perceiving input, or, you know, that would be any kind of information they get from their senses in the same way that you would expect them to. So we change up how we deliver that input. And I'm sounding very all this therapist jargon. But the most important thing about this for therapists who don't really, you don't have to know the theory to still make it work. You know, you just do what the OT says.
I honestly don't know the theory. I know what they showed me the other day, you know. Is this something that when I get there, I need to say, I know his mom and dad are going to stay on top of it, but is this something I need to say, you know, is it time, or should I do it?
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Okay.
I would let the parents
so that's
do it.
That you've done,
I mean,
let the parents do it. Okay.
I would let the parents do it. I don't really brush kids. Do you brush kids, Kate?
Not really. I've kind of toyed with it a long time ago. Actually, I haven't had a kid that they did brushing on and that we've used brushing on in a while. It seems like it's a little less in vogue now than it was maybe 5 years ago, but certainly people are still doing it. But generally,
yeah.
No, because I want to engage them. My preference is if it's done before I'm there.
Me too.
Yeah. You know, because I feel like that's getting them ready to receive what I'm going to give them while I'm there.
That's what I would do is I would say to Mom, hey, listen, don't forget to brush them right before I get here.
You know, the OT might say, you know, right before or whenever. If they're on that every 2 hour thing, you're just going to want to make sure that that they've done it before you get there. And if they haven't, then you say, let's try that. Let's do that first. And let them go ahead and do it. And I would let them do it unless he loves it. And if he absolutely loves it, and if you think that's a way to connect with you, then that might be when I would brush him.
Okay.
You know what I mean? If they're not,
she actually said that he loves it this week. She said he loves it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's great.
So, okay.
Which
and
a lot of
people
do. And, I mean, that's the best indicator. Yeah, he loves it because his little body really is craving it.
Right.
Not all kids who appear that they might love it do love it. You know, I would say the responses I've seen are all over the place. And a lot of times it's the consistency that parents implement it. But sometimes kids just don't really seem to get what they appear to need because they don't love it. But oftentimes they do. So.
Yeah, and you might use that, Brooke, if he is having a really bad day and doesn't seem to want to do anything with you. That might be something that I would try if he, you know, again, kind of as one of your little tricks in your bag of, okay, I've tried 10 other things that he's not really wanting to do with me. Let me just try to brush him, or let's see if Mom can brush him. And that might be a way to, again, calm him. I mean, did he seem... did he seem more engaged and more willing to play? I mean, do you think that was one of the results from that?
Well, when I did get a balloon out, and he was, you know, he was excited about that. He did try to fit in his mouth, of course, but, I was kind of bouncing it around in front of him, and he was trying to grab it. He kept trying to, he started to try to fight me for it. I mean, like, I had it, had it, you know. And I, you know, of course, wanted him to fight me for it. But he ended up then, it was just a few minutes of that. And then he was back just to his wandering around. And I did find out that he likes raisins. I did not know that. So
that's good.
I thought that was good. And I thought, okay,
that's good.
That's really good. You don't even have to feel guilty for giving him junk food.
No.
Raisins is almost like health food.
Yeah, so because they put some out, and I was like, oh, he likes raisins. Didn't
oh,
know that.
Thank you. Why didn't they tell me that? Yeah, I always wonder that, too. Usually if I say, well, what does he snack on? What do you give? I keep probing until I find out what it is they will eat. Raisins is it, huh? There you go.
Yeah. Raisins and chicken nuggets, so.
Well, I go with raisins.
I would go with raisins, too. But that's good. Do you, was he interested enough for you to want to be able to use that, you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, she puts him out on the table, and he was wandering around. I was almost getting ready to leave at that point, and that's when I asked, and I was interested in them, and so I pulled him over there, you know, and I was like, oh, Noah, look, you know, and he got one and smiled and ate it, and so I don't know yet. I mean.
Yeah, he only took one. It wasn't like he cramped.
If I would do the withholding, if he would even care, you know.
Right.
Because he's not a big eater, so.
Yeah. Save it for a few weeks and, you know, start to really ask his mom, does he really eat these a lot? You know, and it might be something you can really, again, shape into using. And for, you know, for a kid like him, he's not going to, you know, bust out a word to say that. He's not going to just be able to say raisin just because you withhold that, or even sign for it yet, because he's not quite ready for that since he's not clapping. But save that little.
Okay. I just want him to be able to like know I have it, you know, right? Just to know that I have that and that he wants it, like look at me, you know.
That's right, and that's how you could use it. Or if he's in a back bedroom and doesn't want to come out, you know, you can show him the raisins and then lead him back to where you are. You know, there are lots of ways that you can use it before he's really ready for you to withhold, per se, and him request with a sign or a word, because, he's going to have some work to do before he's ready to do that. But that's good that you found out that, you know, a new possible motivator for him that you didn't know before. So that was good. The balloon, I would take one every single time, because if that's the first time he's really played that with you, you know, how long do you think he stayed with it with you?
Less than 5, and then he came back, you know, but 5, I got about 5 altogether, I guess. I don't know for sure, but he kind of, that's when he went to the TV, and I had to bring him back, so
right.
I thought,
well,
he
wasn't.
I would
definitely say that is definitely enough interest on his part, reaction on his part to say, okay, 5 minutes even total.
He likes it. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
I mean, that's with him blocked in. That was with him blocked in, you know, like.
Right.
Could not
but that's okay. I mean,
minutes.
In the beginning, Brooke, that's the only way you're going to get him, probably.
Okay.
And as long as he's in there willingly and he's not kicking and screaming and throwing a fit to get out, he just needs a little bit of support to stay with you. And if he's kind of blocked in but he's happy, we'll take that. You know,
absolutely.
I would say because
absolutely.
Otherwise,
and
he's going to wander and you're going to get very little.
Yeah, and haven't you had toys that he's had absolutely no interest at all in that you've shown him? So 5 minutes versus zero.
Yeah, that was,
I think that's
that was
a win.
Really good. That was really good.
Yeah. I would keep doing that and look for ways, you know, do the same things that caught his interest last week. When you see him at home this week, do those same things, and then in a week or two, or maybe even longer, several more sessions, think, okay, how can I expand this a little bit more? Maybe hide the balloon under the parachute, you know what I mean, to help kind of transition him then to the parachute. And so, again, this is kind of building the length of time that he'll stay with you, and you know you've got those two great go-to activities that he that he really, really likes. And so sometimes I won't even use the balloon or the parachute the parachute especially, because he really likes that. Kind of save that for when you really need it, like you did last time. You got the parachute out after he was in there, you know, transfixed by the TV.
Right.
Yeah, so you'll be able to use
it. Have you tried doing the balloons where you pick them up and drop them on them?
Yeah.
How'd that go?
No, wait a minute. Say that again, where I just hold the balloon and drop it?
I do a little routine with kids who have sensory stuff, maybe have some spectrum-y tendencies, where, Laura, I don't know if you do this or something like it, but this is something I've developed over time, and it seems like it gets a lot of kids. Sometimes they like this more than they like playing with the balloons. But what I do is I take a handful of them, and I sing a little song, and then I hold them up and drop them on them, but I want them to be
a handful of unblown up balloons.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh,
I wanted to just clarify. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't try that. So I
tell
know.
Us your little routine. Tell us your song.
I
want to
hear the song.
You say.
I do the song, Laura. This you've heard it before, but a family we knew, the kids liked it. That. If all the raindrops were lemon drops and gumdrops, oh, what a rain that would be. And as I'm doing that, I'm lifting them up. But I kind of take a big old handful, and I kind of do them in front of them. If all the raindrops were lemon, and I'm going up, and they're watching them. They're thinking, what is this crazy lady doing? And when I get to the top and I've got my handful over them, you know, oh, what a rain it would be. And then I say, rain! And I let them all fall down on them.
That's cute.
Yay. I love it.
And they just think that is the goofiest, most exciting. It's, of course, very visual. And for a child like that who really gets, you know, that's what does get him, it appears, from the things you've told us. He likes that really visual, you know, same thing he gets from the TV, the same thing he gets from Elephant, the same thing he gets from the parachute. Everything that you've identified he likes is visual, 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 visual. So, and a lot of these kids do, if you'll introduce them to some, you know, the, and I know you've tried some of the Aboom and the other stuff from Laura's book. That's just, there's another little, see if he likes it, you know, just.
Okay.
It, I can get, I mean, most of the kids, and then, you know, I might play with the balloon a little bit when I start to see him losing them. I say, uh-oh, you know, is it rain? Oh, no, rain! And I get the balloons, and they fall, the raindrops were lemon drops and gum drops. Oh, what a rain that would be. Sometimes I'll, rain! You know, and
yay! I'm excited.
Yeah,
I love that.
And then I do that. Yay! And get him
yay!
To do it.
The clap. Yeah.
Yes.
Work that clap into
should,
it.
Okay, we should put that in the book, Lauren. That could go
now,
in the book.
So many of these, Brooke, I think I did give her a few, but you know what? I'll just do them instinctively. I don't even know.
Yeah,
I had
yeah.
a kid who was really into touching them. A lot of the key, these kids are, they, you know, first you give them a balloon if they've never been able to touch one or have little exposure to it. They're real kind of weird about touching it, like, ooh, you know, they kind of uh-huh. just. So it wasn't too long ago that I decided that rain song would work well with this. And since then,
that's
I've
cute.
Been on lots of those kids, and they like it. I mean, they get real excited. Woohoo! They want you to do it again. And they can't really
yeah,
do
and
it
I would
themselves.
And I would
good.
Make a big deal about grabbing those balloons up really quick and then doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because with him, they go in the mouth, too.
Right.
You
know, right.
That would not
yeah,
be good.
Yeah.
But.
And, but you'll be able to do it. I mean, you'll be able to, don't use like 35 or anything,
well,
but maybe you'll be able to kind of
right.
you'll be able to kind of grab him up before he
right.
before he gets
usually
those.
They're so excited that they're kind of woohoo and gives you a little
and
time to pick them up.
Like,
because I've certainly done this
yeah.
with kids who can stick them, who do stick them in their mouth. The other thing I do is when it rains, a lot of times as I let them fall, I'll take my hands and kind of rub on them, you know, rub their arms real heavy, rub their little bellies, and I say, get wet, get wet, get wet. So, I know it's weird, but this is the way, you know, you're also working on getting him to desensitize to you touching him.
Yeah.
And but they like that, too. It's just another little kickback they get from the rain and the balloons coming down, and they're really interested visually. You got to make sure he's got them looking up when they come down. Which is why as I'm singing it, I've got them dancing in front of them. I want them watching them. You know what I mean? Fall the raindrops. I'm going back and forth. Oh, what a rain that would be. Rain! And then I'm rubbing on their arms or their legs or whatever, because I want it to be so engaging to them that they want to do it again.
Yeah.
And the more you give them that way, and it also helps for those kids who are very sensitive to you touching them, because they're
yeah.
excited about
yeah.
that touch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's great, and I think the reason that this activity will work is because he already likes the balloons, and because you're going to give him that visual bump he needs, and because you're going to be working that touch in. So there are lots of reasons that this should be a winner.
Okay.
So that's a
I'm
great
excited about that.
It's a good
idea.
One, I have to say. I pretty much... Even my kids who don't have big sensory things like it, but
I
the ones
yeah.
oh, that's
really,
fun.
Mm-hmm.
My 4-year-old would love that. So
that's
well,
a good one. What other things have you had success with, or things that you want to ask us about, Brooke? Either one, either something that's worked that we might be able to give you. Okay, now try this as a way to expand
yeah.
it, or something that you've tried that's just. You need maybe a little idea to help you tweak it to make it work for him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, not a lot has worked. So.
Right.
And you gave me tons of great ideas last week. I did take. I think maybe I did too much this week because I had the bouncy balls in my bag too.
yeah.
I mean, it is a long hour, you know, like when
oh,
5 minutes
yeah.
of this and 5 minutes of that. So I got the bouncy balls out, and that. he just, you know, he wasn't there. He wasn't into it. And then it was all carpeted, so that wasn't working. But, which I'm not going to give up. I can do it at his house. They have tiles. So, you know, I don't know how he would do as far as, like, the paper airplanes. I mean, I'm going to try it, absolutely.
It's probably not visually
paper,
exciting
like,
enough for him.
Paper,
yeah.
like, is the one thing that he craves. Like,
yeah.
he wants to eat paper. He wants to eat my paper. He wants
well, then maybe hold off on the paper airplane.
Yeah, maybe we will. I just kind of came to that in my mind while I was saying that. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's very strange. Every time he has paper in his mouth when I get there. And it's like they just can't keep it. You know, he finds it on the floor, and it's not like it's a messy house. It's just he finds it.
Yeah, and doesn't that remind you of a younger baby? I mean, that really reminds you of a younger baby.
Yeah,
and so that's just kind of where he is.
You have to keep the carpet clean because they're going to put whatever they find in their mouth. But his is especially paper. Another thing that I wanted to ask about, though, was this week he, and I think it's because it was at his aunt's house, and his house isn't, I guess, that doesn't happen there because it's not there, but she had the light switches were a little bit lower, and there were like four switches on the one thing, you know, and he kept turning them off and on. And she said he has been doing this all day and he's never touched it before. And he was looking up. He kind of it was like he knew, you know, and that, I mean, like, I remember my kids when they were a year old, they wanted me to go to the light switch, you know, so they could do that. So I kind of used
that
a little.
I
was over there because he was interested in it. So I was like, okay, you know, lights, lights, on, off, on, off, you know. And as soon as I got there, he was done. It's kind of like he wants to do it. But if I want to do it, it's not a good idea.
Will he push you out of the way so that he can do it?
No, he just leaves. He just
does.
He
I was going to say, even if they're a little bit mad at you with pushing you and stuff, it's still communicative. Dr. Greenspan does a really good job of talking about that, about being playfully obstructive.
Okay. So, like,
so
when I grab
ever
his
go
arm, like when I pull, I mean, I'm constantly having to pull his arm to get him to, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean. Like, not hurting him, but just totally holding him there. And then he does start to get mad a little bit, that more of just like pulling on me and crying, pulling away and crying, more than not like trying to get my hand off him. He doesn't do that. He doesn't like try to pull me away, my hand off of him, but he does try to get away from me.
Well, what I do when a kid really likes something like the light switch, I do the whole light on and off, and then I act like they're going to have to kind of move me so that they can get to the lights, and do it really jokingly, like, you know, tell Laura move or push me, push, what do you want to do? So that they have to do something to me to get them to, so that they can get to what they like. And again, if he just walked away, he may not be quite ready for that yet.
Yeah,
he just would go kind of give up. The reason he's doing the light switch is probably because he is right smack there, cognitively caught in that cause and effect stage, and he's probably just started to kind of notice, you know, I can change my world here. I push this up and the light's on and down. So how does he do with other cause and effect kinds of toys, like even baby toys, like Poppin' Pals or there's that Fisher-Price racetrack that you can push the button and the whirly, the swirly track.
Yeah, I've got
track.
That. The day that I took that was a bad day, you know, so I haven't tried it again because it's just not happening, you know.
He didn't want to do it.
He did not want to, he didn't want to look at it, or he wouldn't, you know, I mean, he wouldn't, no matter where I put it in front of him and the cars and.
He wasn't interested.
Wasn't into that. No.
Was he doing the light switch at that point? You said you never seen him do that kind of thing before.
Yeah, I've never seen him do it, and I don't know. I need to, kind of get back in his house and see where are the light switches, and has he ever done that there? Because I don't know that he has.
It might have just been novel, and that's
It might. There's just right there on the wall, you know, as he was walking right past them. I'm not really sure. Now, I have taken just like a toy. I've got like a Sesame Street. It's the baby Hoppin' Pals thing, you know, where he puts the button slide thing, and it plays music, or it sings a little song that the Sesame Street characters sing, a short little song after you do it. And he likes music, so, but I would have to with his hand, you know, do the buttons and the knobs.
Right.
You know, like I think it was another stayed with me for a few minutes, but not very long.
Well, I always try to think about if it's just 10 seconds or 20 seconds longer than it was the first time we did it, then that's progress. And you have
that's
to look at those kinds of things in that, measure it in that way. And don't you do the same thing, Kate? Even if it's, you're just building that over time. And I try not to think about it like he only stayed with it for a few minutes. Sometimes it's that kids aren't familiar enough with it. I mean, we naturally kind of assume that kids are bored is why they leave, but usually it's because it's too hard or they're just, again, it's not kind of second nature. So even things that he's done for just, you know, a time or two, I don't necessarily count that as a total loss. I take it back.
Okay.
I mean, don't you do that too, Kate?
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing, Brooke, is that he's getting to be more comfortable with you. So what you introduced 2 months ago or a month ago, he may have rejected because he wasn't comfortable enough with you. Now he's getting better with you. You've got some things that he likes. You've got your parachute. You've got, you know, all those that you're building your repertoire. Now you can reintroduce some things that, you know, he didn't respond to or you saw no great response because he's more likely to stay with you now and realize that you're fun. You know what I mean? So in the beginning, they'll respond or fail to respond more often than not by leaving something that in a month or two or three they might really, really like.
Might be ready for. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so anything that he sort of has done a couple of times, you take that as a victory and think, okay, that's something I'm going to, you know, when I'm standing out at my car thinking, what am I going to take in this week? You know, that's something I would think, okay, he's done that at least a couple of times. Let's see this time. Maybe this week he'll do it 5 times. You know, maybe this week he'll stay with me for 2 minutes versus 1 minute with this. And that really is how you have to measure progress with these kids because you're not going to get anything for 20 minutes.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's just not going to happen. So you have to change kind of how you look at how you measure progress. And one thing that I say in the conference, and I think I probably said in Evansville, is anytime I'm doing a social game with a kid, if he does it just with me one time, the first time we do it, then the next time if he does it, you know, if he does it twice, I think, oh, my gosh, we had 100% improvement.
Okay.
And so that's how you look at that rather than he needs to stay with me.
Is it on the positive? Okay.
Yeah, you know, and anything longer than what you got last time and anything that's not screaming, crying, throwing a fit is progress.
So
even things that he's done just a couple little times, start really thinking about, okay, now he did that like 3 or 4 times. I'm going to take that back. And this next week, if I can get 5 or 6 times or if I can get 7 or 8 times, that's progress. And you point that out to his parents and say, last time he didn't stay with this. He only did it a couple times. This time he did it 6 different times. And you've got to train them how to measure progress like that too. Otherwise, you're going to feel like you failed with 10 different toys when he might have done all 10 of those things 4 or 5 more times than he did on the first time you took them. And that's how you're going to have to measure progress with him, is just teeny tiny little baby step. And that's going to make you feel better too.
It doesn't have to
be him fitting with something 20 minutes, just if he did it 4 times versus 2 times last week. Oh, my gosh, that's 100% improvement. Woo, we did so good. And look at it kind of in that way. Otherwise, it's really defeating because he's not going to go from where he is right now to totally typical, even by the time you finish seeing him. You know, there's lots and lots of stuff in between there, so I wouldn't give up with those things. And Kate had a really good suggestion about taking things, you know, from the very beginning that he even kind of liked. You know, take those again. You know, take those in over the next few weeks.
Now, I know something that you showed at the conference was the little girl in the chair. Like you had to set her in a chair to keep her there. And I did try. We tried that, and. And it worked, you know, I mean, definitely he wanted up earlier, and But do you think that would be something that I should do with him?
Only if he doesn't really fight you on it. If he really fights you on it, I wouldn't do it. That little girl sits in her chair all the time. I mean, that's okay. Where she's in the little girl in the conference. She that's just her little chair where she sits to watch TV, where she sits to do lots of things. And then it was there one day, and she had just started to walk. And, you know, again, she's talking about a little girl with Down syndrome, my little Emma Kate.
Yeah. All right.
And because she had just started to walk, so she wanted to walk all the time. And so that's when I started using the chair, is pulling it over and her sitting there. And now that's what she does. When I get there, she goes straight to that chair because, you know, we've built that as part of our routine. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so try that with him. My guess would be that he might get a little bit mad about that, but you don't know until you try.
Okay. And then, like, would I put the toys kind of on his lap? I mean, not really on his lap, but...
Sure.
Put them on him. Okay, right there we can reach. Okay.
And
also, the ball toy that you have on your Teach Me to Talk DVD that thank you for sending. I haven't got to watch all three yet, but the ball toy... where the balls go down. I know that's in one of your book, but I haven't been able to find
the one with
that.
The hammer?
Yeah.
The one with the hammer?
Yeah.
Oh, Brooke, you've got to get that toy. That's the best toys ever made. Target.
Target has that. Sometimes Walmart has a version of that.
I was in two different Targets, and I did not find that one. And that's the one thing I wanted.
They've changed the coloring on it, which I don't like, but... it's more like safari colors now. It's like purple and green, and it's funky colors. But it's in the section of parents. And, Laura, you're right, Walmart. I've never actually played with that one, the Walmart version. I've given it as a gift to kids before. I find that kids, boy, it's hard to find a kid who doesn't love that toy, particularly these sensory seekers who really need that, you know, lots of feedback and deep pressure, and it's great for cause and effect. It's great for getting to... Go ahead, Laura.
Well, it's going to be great for him because he doesn't use his hands very well yet.
Right.
If he's not even clapping. So for him to be able to learn how to push the balls in the hole first and then actually use the hammer to hit it, I mean, you need to be doing backflips the day that he learns how to do that, because that's using a tool, and it's harder, but it's interesting enough to almost, like Kate said, almost every kid, even older kids like that. I mean, even kids that are turning 3 that I haven't played with it in a long time, I'll take it in anyway, and they act like it's the first time they've seen it. They love it. It's a universal winner.
My husband works for the toys at Walmart, so I've been telling my husband, I need this toy. You need to get this toy in.
So he works
in the toys in Walmart?
He's the manager over the toy department
of
our local Walmart. So I've kind of got a shoe in there. If they would just improve their toys a little bit, I would be happy. I would try to get the flat ball.
Is that like I've seen it at Walmart. Is it a Christmas thing? Is it like their... what's that?
I think it's been in I think it's been in the cheaper toys. The generic.
We have a smaller Walmart too, so they might not carry it.
You're gonna have to drive to the city, Brooke.
I know.
And
every time I'm there, it's like
meeting. He can have somebody from a big Walmart bring one. How about that?
Transfer me that toy in. Discovery Toys has a version of that. I don't know if you know anybody that sells that, but it's like a boat.
Yeah.
And I've played with that at kids' houses before, but I like the one that I have because it has a mirror behind the balls, behind the ramp. And kids that are visual really, I guess, get off on seeing that whole, seeing the reflection of that ball go down. So that's, you know, that's something too that makes them really like that toy, because it's got the mirror component. And I've used other versions of that, but that really is the best one.
It's the best.
So hopefully you'll be able to find it.
I have a couple other ones, but ever since
maybe
I got
that. Maybe they have it on their website, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
I haven't heard that part yet, but.
I'm sure they do. Okay. And listen, Amazon.com, you can find almost any toy known to man. At Amazon.com.
Okay.
And I went berserk in November and bought a ton of toys that I've always wanted and never had as research, quote-unquote, for my new book. And I ordered
so many things from there that I might have seen a couple of years ago, or somebody, Kate told me about it, or some mom told me about it, and darn if I didn't find nearly everything at Amazon.com, so you can try there.
Okay.
And I think I think instead of calling it a parent's toy anymore, they've redone that to call it, it's a different line of toys now. It's like B something, like B,
oh,
period.
Really?
Yeah, they don't even call
it
parents anymore. B as in boy.
Hmm.
B period something. And there's another word after that, but I've forgotten what it is. But that's, I just search like B period toys on Amazon, and it'll come up on there. And Amazon is good because if you order so much, you get like, even like $25, you get free shipping.
Okay.
So it's that one might be an avenue for you to get some other toys that you've looked for that you can't really find. Because by the time you pay the gas to go to all those other places with as expensive as gas is, you might as well just order it online.
Yeah, that's true.
But that
yeah.
is definitely one you need to work towards having in your arsenal, Brooke, because, kids love it. It's no batteries. It's indestructible. It's just, like Laura said, it doesn't seem to matter the age or the
ability.
Mm-hmm. Kids who are way past it love it, and kids who are just, you know, not even there yet love it. So in the beginning, you're going to probably have to give them, and again, it's another opportunity for you to touch on him and get, you know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
build that that rapport with him where he's going to allow you into his little world. If he wants to get the ball, push the ball down and can't do it, or you're giving him the hammer, don't be surprised if he has no clue what to do with the hammer. Can't tell you many times.
He won't.
But you're going to show him, and then you're going to give it to him, and you're going to say, you do it, boom, or that's what I do. And I take their little hands and help them do it. And before they realize you're touching them, they're pounding that thing, and they're so excited, you know, woohoo, they're doing it, you know.
Yeah.
Good way to get in there and, you know, again, continue to break down that wall that he has around him of, you can't touch me, even though this is a kid who loves to be touched by his parents. He doesn't tolerate touch from anybody other than his parents very well. I guess his uncle and maybe his aunt.
You know, but some of that might get better with brushing, too. I mean,
yeah.
That might be something that you really start to see with brushing, is that he tolerates touch better, because that's supposed to be one of the byproducts, is that it improves their tactile system or their touch system so that they can tolerate that a little bit better. So over time you may be able to see an improvement from brushing from there.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions you have for us, Miss Brooke?
That is what they call me. No, I don't think so. Not that are coming to my mind right now. I mean, of course, I could ask you about every kid on my list right now. I did have another little boy that was just diagnosed Friday with mild autism. And he's actually younger than Noah by a couple months. And he isn't as severe, you know.
Now, was he diagnosed by a different entity than Noah?
Yeah, he was diagnosed by Wiley's and Indy's.
Yeah. And have you suggested to the parents that they get a second opinion or no?
To Noah's parents?
I didn't suggest. Did they say that again? Did I suggest it?
Yeah. Had they brought up, should we get a second opinion? Because the first people they saw, they just said, wait, right?
Yeah, they said, wait. And this family, when they went this past Friday, they called me on the way home. His OT and I had already kind of talked to them. We feel like, you know, it's going to be a mild diagnosis. So they were prepared. They were pretty much prepared for that, I think, just because of things that showed them and, you know, talked about.
Right.
Because his OT is my best friend, so we were able to talk about him and talk to them and have that relationship where we're all working together. But
now, that's very interesting that you're telling me that your OT is the best friend, because she needs to be teaching you about all this sensory stuff.
Yes, and about
why brushing works. And she ought to be able to, and why, you know, and all this stuff.
And she's been in it for 3 years, so we need to talk more about that. But we actually try not to talk too much about work when we're together.
Okay. Well, I would totally change that if I were you. Because I think even just talking through some of those things, I mean, the best ideas and the way that I understand all this therapy stuff really is by hashing it out with other team members and friends. Yeah, yeah. And that really, I mean, was the start of mine and Kate's friendship when we were, you know, both kind of working in the same system but didn't know each other at all. And we, you know, found kindred spirits with, oh, my gosh, you like to talk about this as much as I do. Oh, my goodness. And all the, you know, 10-plus years of phone calls since then, I can't imagine. I know you're friends with her outside of your profession, but I would really say teach me sensory stuff. Teach me what I need to know. And have her kind of, you know, you go to her school of sensory processing and learn some of that stuff. Now, does she do first steps or she doesn't?
Yes, she is first steps also.
And you couldn't talk her into taking Noah?
Well, it's actually a different county. Like, I tried really hard. County. I actually drive an hour to Noah.
And I'm just teasing you, putting you on the spot like that. I'm talking to you
I would. I
can't talk to you into taking my kids either, so there you go.
Not anymore, but before I took everybody. So.
And it is so much fun to share. Do you ever share kids with her, Brooke?
Yeah, well, like I said, we share the little boy that was
that
just
one.
Diagnosed.
Yeah.
Just over the last 2 months, she started going there just after I went and saw that he needed something else. And
I know Indiana's pretty weird about you know, referring people by name, and I understand all the, you know, that system difference, because we certainly both, Kate and I both worked in Indiana. And we're just only kind of, you know, teasing you about that. But really, I would say to her, explain to me why, blah, 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 regarding a sensory thing. Because she's your friend, and she's going to be able to do it in a way that you'll understand and in a way that will probably make more sense to you. And you'll be able to say to her, I don't get it. Take out all the OT fancy words and, you know, tell me in plain English why this should work.
Yeah, Laura, we joke about how much – the podcast is really just our normal phone calls. We just record it once a week.
This is our friendship,
That's how much we talk about this sort of thing. But, oh, well, it is easy to learn from friends and really fun when you share the same kid and you can, you know, troubleshoot together. In this case, she could help you with the sensory stuff and you could help with the whatever cognitive and play stuff or whatever. So very helpful, especially on hard kids.
Well, she actually, like, she kind of got in after I'd been seeing this other little boy for about 6 months. And I was like, he has got to have an OT. You've got to make room for him and come on.
Yeah.
And so she did. And his mom and I had talked about autism. And he didn't. I guess I forgot to tell her that, like, that the mom knew. And so she was kind of going around. And one day she said, wait, his mom knows? I've been kind of going around it until he got diagnosed. They totally are on board with knowing that too. Everything's good now. I mean, as far as, you know, he's not as severe as Noah. So
you were surprised that he got the diagnosis when Noah didn't. And I think Kate hit the nail on the head when she said it really is so subjective, and it just really depends on who you see, and sometimes even on what day you go, and as to whether you're going to get that diagnosis or not. And for parents that are listening, let me just kind of say, because I know they're thinking, why would an OT say his mom knows and not kind of understand that? Sometimes in early intervention, some programs are really, really discourage therapists from talking about diagnoses specifically. Autism is one of those where if a parent really doesn't mention it, sometimes our state programs don't want us to bring that up first. So that's Brooke's point of reference with, or not even yours, your friend's point of reference I'm not going to bring this up until mom is concerned about it. And again, some parents won't understand that. They'll say, why didn't she tell them? Why wouldn't that therapist just naturally say that? without, you know, she's withholding information, but at the same time, some parents aren't ready to hear that yet, and some, again, some programs really discourage their therapists from talking about a diagnostic thing, a diagnostic label, and then some therapists don't feel comfortable with even informally diagnosing or suggesting it. So I just wanted to explain that to any listener who might not have understood that comment.
Right.
Because lots of our listeners are parents too. So, and so this brings me to, if you're a parent and if you're wondering, gosh, could my kid have autism or could my kid have whatever, if you're thinking it, don't wait on the therapist to bring it up. Ask them, approach them, because that certainly is well within any parent's right or realm or whatever you want to say.
Right.
You know,
and
don't
the therapist
just necessarily
might not be
think.
Able to- therapist on, like, as far as Indiana goes, is not able to say that. So,
yeah.
Right.
And I just wanted to explain to parents, because sometimes in the past, Kate and I have gotten letters about things when parents haven't understood what we were talking about. So,
well,
we've
and, you know, autism is the big one. That's what people are afraid to talk about, and parents are oftentimes, you know, have a very difficult time hearing it, and it's even further complicated because, like you said, Brooke, here are two kids. One appears to be pretty significantly affected, and they told him, no, well, come back later, we'll call it sensory processing disorder. And then another little guy that you see goes to a different entity, and the truth, you know, it, like Laura said, it could vary on the day or the group that they see at that, because most of these larger agencies have teams of developmental pediatricians, OT, speech therapists, and they it may vary by the team. And then I think as a whole, each group or agency or hospital oftentimes has a different reputation. Riley, I think, is, you know, I hate to say fairly generous with their diagnoses. At least when I was in Indiana, that was my experience. Not overly so, but they, you know, if they would say something like mild autism. Here, locally, the tendency is to say, if it's not the most, no, that's not fair. They tend to only diagnose those children who are over three, by definition, and pretty severely affected. So there's a big discrepancy in who gets the diagnosis and who doesn't, and it's really hard for parents. You know, sometimes difficult for therapists as well, but it's just not the kind of diagnosis that they really have a quote-unquote test for, a lab test, which would be great, you know.
Right.
They have tests, but they're psychological tests, and there's a lot of gray area based, you know, as far as who gets an actual diagnosis and who doesn't. So it doesn't make it any easier for parents to navigate, and it's so murky.
But that was great that you were talking to that family about that, and the OT came on, and she was able to talk with them about it, too, and get them prepared for that so that when they got the official diagnosis that it wasn't as devastating as it might have been had they not been prepared for that. And so I always applaud parents who go ahead and make those tough decisions, because a lot of parents don't want to hear it and will almost do everything they can to make sure that they don't. So that was... That was great that you guys did that. Anything else we need to talk about before we wrap up today?
I'm good for now. I'm sure
Let
I'll have
say,
more.
Right. Right. You I'll... make our Sunday podcast really fun and exciting. So fun for us, fun for me anyway, because thinking about all these things, and we always, when we get our emails, I always think, if we could ask them, we'd ask them this. But here you are, and you've allowed us to ask you 2 weeks in a row. And to help you troubleshoot
My husband did say, are you going to be on there for an hour again? I said,
Isn't
I don't
it a fast
know.
Hour, though? I mean, you know, it's
yeah,
easy
it does,
to talk
it
about.
Really
because
Yeah.
Well, it has been so much fun for me. And thank you so much for sending me the question that kind of got us started with asking this. And I have so loved getting to know you over these last couple of weeks. And listen, keep us updated on how he does and how it goes with him.
Let me know
you
how he likes that rain routine. I found it to be pretty
I
universal.
Can't wait to
do that. That's so funny.
I'm using it
that
tomorrow.
That is so funny. Oh, that'll be good.
Thank
well, keep
you guys.
Us updated. And
okay,
you take
thanks,
care,
Brooke.
We've so enjoyed getting to know you.
Okay. You too. Bye.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye. We do have another therapist that's calling in next week. We've already worked that out, too, with a therapist who called in, or not called, who sent me an email asking me some questions about a child on her caseload. And actually, she might have had a question about more than one kid. I can't remember now. That was Monday when that happened last week. But we have another therapist set to call next week, so that will be exciting. And these are my favorite shows, helping kind of problem solve for real kids in real situations when we can ask Kate, like you said, we can ask her, does he do this? Does he like this? And
have
so
you tried
that we
this?
Can give,
what about this? Yeah.
Yeah.
An email, it gives us a tidbit, but we don't get to be as, you know, really specific because we don't
right.
have feedback. And when they're on there to say, well, that didn't work, that was a bomb, or we tried, you know, we
yeah,
really
or it
get,
might just. Yeah, or it might have just been the way that she kind of tried it, and we don't
mm-hmm.
know that. And if she, and more importantly, the person that we're answering doesn't know that either, because then, like with Brooke, we're able to say, did you do this? Did you do that? So that we can even help her tweak maybe an idea. Like she's talking about some of those things today. Well, he only did it. He didn't really like it. He only did it a couple of times. And both you and I were going, a couple of times? That's good. Try again.
Pretty good.
You know, where he stayed with it 5 minutes. 5 minutes, that's great.
Yeah,
and
even
so
5 minutes total for a guy like
yeah.
you know, she describes, is that is a winner in my book. Not that that's the
Me
that's,
too.
She's made it to the finish line. She hasn't. But, hey, she got out of the starting gate. So
exactly.
that's big.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's big.
And she has something to build on. And then she can mm-hmm. hear us say, oh, no, that's good. That's progress. And then she feels better about it. Then that's going to make her want to try harder. And then when she tries harder, it's going to make mom and dad feel better.
Right.
And so it just goes on and on and on. So I'm excited when therapists can call. And that therapist's name, I think, is Randy, if I remember correctly. And so we will hear from her next Sunday night with her question, hopefully.
Sounds great.
Any parting words from you for today?
I hope we have lots of clear days so that my house can continue to make progress on the outside. That's my parting thought.
It's
See?
Supposed to be
Sunshine.
Beautiful in Louisville this week, yeah, and it certainly has been
a
beautiful
we
weekend.
We have a couple days of rain on the docket. But.
Oh, I haven't seen it. I heard the weather guy say last night that he thought winter was over, and Johnny and I both looked at each other and said, great, that means we'll have two more blizzards since he said it was over. So
I think it means spring showers have arrived, but oh well.
Maybe so. Maybe
yeah.
so. Well, at least it's warmer. I'm happier.
Yes, it is. That's an improvement. All right, Ms.
Okay.
Laura, good show. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye.